You're tuned into the morning show on WBAI, and the place on the dial is 99.5 FM. I'm Michael G. Haskins in studio with Katie Halper. Katie, good morning.
Good morning. We're going to bring our next guest. We're really excited to have her. She is a Nation Fellow. She writes all over. She's a journalist. She has a podcast. You've probably come across her if you care at all about things like labor, the economy, you know, kind of unimportant things like that. Mm-hmm. So welcome, Sarah Jaffe.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us so early.
I know. You know, I was just listening to you guys talk and thinking, like, weren't we supposed to get all this new high-speed rail? Wasn't that part of that stimulus bill that I dimly remember back in 2009?
Right. What happened to it?
Whoops. What happened to that?
I don't know. Listen,
Scott Walker killed some in the Midwest.
Right.
You guys weren't born at this time, but, I mean, we were supposed to be flying around in individual, you know,
pods,
devices at
right.
this time. You know what I mean?
Where's my
what happened?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Where's my jetpack? The Republicans killed my jetpack.
I just realized,
that would be a good campaign slogan.
It would be, yeah. Where's my hoverboard?
Right.
Where's
right.
my hoverboard? Give me my hoverboard, RNC. Maybe Scott Walker has there's a conflict of interest because his name is Walker. I just realized, right? I mean, he may be anti transportation just for very selfish, immature reasons,
yeah.
which I wouldn't put beyond him because he's not the most sophisticated guy. Did you guys hear, by the way, when he wished a Jewish donor a happy Hanukkah? I think it was, and he wished him at the end. He said Molotov. Instead of Mazel Tov?
Yes, I did hear that.
Yeah, so great. What a right metaphor. Yeah. So, Sarah, tell us a bit about yourself for those of us who, the unlucky of us, who don't already know your work.
All right. So I am the co-host of a podcast that's hosted by Dissent Magazine called Belabored, where we talk about the labor movement, labor organizing, the workplace. This week, we actually talked about universal basic income, which was kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And I'm a reporting fellow at the Nation Institute, like you said, where mostly that is supporting me writing a book right now. So I'm writing a book on social movements since the financial crisis.
Oh, great. How exciting.
Yeah.
What's the...
Scott Walker does, in fact, make an appearance.
Oh, I would hope so.
Among several other people that you guys know and love.
Right. And so. What's the ETA for your book?
Oh, goodness. I have to write it first.
Right. Okay. So it's sometime in the...
Sometime in 2016, yeah.
Okay. In the near future.
Yet. Yep. It's coming out. It's from Nation Books. And, I will give you more information as I have it.
Great. And we'll have you on again. And it will come out before hoverboards come out, just to give you guys a general sense.
It will probably come out before hoverboards,
right.
sadly, unless, like, Bernie Sanders makes hoverboards
for
his political platform or something.
That would be amazing. Yeah,
somebody needs to get on this hoverboard.
I know, in both senses of the word, right? Ali G was very upset that the hoverboard, I don't know if you ever saw this Ali G episode, where he goes to all these famous businessmen, including Donald Trump, and one of the products he's trying to sell is the hoverboard. And doesn't understand why, if it was in a movie years ago, Back to the Future, why it hasn't been invented yet.
I know.
He, like, you know, Ali G thinks outside the box. So tell us about your latest articles. I know you wrote an article, a great article in Dame Magazine, called When Will We Stop Exploiting Home Care Workers? And then you also helped out on an article that's in AM New York about the nail salon workers.
Yeah, so the nail salon stuff I'll start with because, I didn't write anything. I helped with some suggestions of things that people can do because there was this real reaction to that New York Times investigation into the nail salon industry, and it was mostly people sort of having a lot of feelings about how they're bad people for getting their nails done.
Right,
and
right. So a lot of shaming, right?
Right, yeah, there was a lot of shaming. There was a lot of people just sort of swearing that they'll never get their nails done again. And that's not a particularly political or helpful response
right.
to the people who are working in those jobs, right? Like,
right.
they have those jobs because they need to make a living, not, like, you know. So if you just stop going, you're not really helping them. And
can you just, for listeners, in case they didn't, for people who didn't catch that New York Times two-part article, can you just summarize what it
is? You are one of the two people who did not read this.
I know. Way to shame them. Just kidding.
I know. It just seemed to, like, really...
No, it's totally caught on, like, wildfire. Yeah.
I write sad stories about low-wage workers all the time and only dream of a response like this one got, right? Which is great, but... So Sarah Vaslin Neer at the New York Times did a year-long investigation. I also only dream of being able to do a year-long investigation into anything, into the working conditions in nail salons in New York, and so found just rampant wage theft, people being paid like less than $3 an hour, people being forced to pay to learn new skills in the workplace so that they could make more money, tip theft, and also just really awful working conditions in terms of the chemicals that they use on people's nails, especially like artificial nails and things. And they're not being given proper protective gear, things like that, to make them safe from that. So yeah, so there was a lot of reaction that was kind of like very personal and very emotional and people are really depoliticized around labor for the most part.
Right.
And so there wasn't an immediate connection of, like, what can I do? And the article sort of left out the fact that, like, there are, in fact, workers organizing in this field. Adhikar, which is a community organization that works in mostly the Nepalese community, has been putting together a coalition to work for New York Healthy Nail Salons. It's modeled after a California coalition that did the same kind of work, and they actually have a bill that they're putting forward in the New York City Council that Letitia James had introduced like a week before the article came out, public advocate Letitia James.
She's great.
And so, you know, so there's legislation moving on this. There is, I remember seeing City Council member Brad Lander tweeting at Tisch that, you know, I'm sorry I didn't support your legislation sooner. I will do so now. And so these workers are organizing. There are community groups that work in the various immigrant communities that are overwhelmingly dominate these salons. And so we really thought that, you know, let's kind of put together a list of solutions that is a little bit more political. It will actually has the workers' actual demands in mind.
That's always nice to actually incorporate.
Yeah.
The people. And I also want to just give you guys a shout out, because I know that sometimes there's a bit of snobbery in journalism, but if we're actually at all consistent with our politics, I would say, and I have argued in the past, it's actually very useful to write things in ways that are digestible for people who won't sit down and read a 5-page article in The New Yorker.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So I like that you guys present this in, and I've seen your writing, and obviously you're a very gifted writer. You can write in all different forms, but I kind of get excited when I see something that takes on a very serious issue, and it's not a listicle, but it does clearly state 4 ways women can help clip nail salon abuses, which I think is great.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes you want to write something that's long and spun out and sort of considers a lot of different issues, and sometimes the solution is, you know, that these workers have been making demands and here are what they are.
Right.
And here's how you can help.
Right. So
ways you can help.
Give the bullet points of the 4 ways.
Yeah, I mean, the number one is always, and this is true for every other industry, is you know, support worker organizing.
Right.
Support these organizations that are working to make these salons better with the workers who are doing it. This legislation that's being moved forward. Make sure that, right, Governor Cuomo made a big dramatic announcement that he's going to be cracking down on these nail salons. There is an opportunity to sort of make sure that that response doesn't end up punishing the same workers that we're trying to help by including the worker organizations, the workers themselves and their needs and demands in the response. So that, again, so that it's not just sort of an enforcement first response that ends up punishing a lot of immigrant workers because we suddenly feel bad about getting our nails done.
Right.
And then the last solution is essentially also, like, you know, big national policies that make immigrant workers' lives easier would make all of these workers' lives easier and make them less easy to exploit.
Right.
So when we see, you know, whether we're talking about the nail salons, whether we're talking about car washes in New York, which have very similar labor conditions, actually, whether we're talking about, you know, your neighborhood grocery store, there have been organizing campaigns at neighborhood grocery stores across Brooklyn. There are, in many, many cases, immigrant workers at the heart of these that are being exploited largely because their boss can threaten to have them deported if they complain.
Right. And we don't have that much time, but I'd love for you to just give us a little bit about, share a little bit about what you learned on writing the Dame article, Dame magazine article about home healthcare workers.
Yeah, so I'm kind of obsessed with home care workers and domestic workers and their organizing. Because,
sorry, I said home health care. I meant home care, sorry.
Well, home health care workers, domestic workers in general, all of this, because these are people who are working in other people's homes, who are very, very isolated, and who are managing to do really kind of amazing organizing in a way that seems really, really difficult. And also, they've been mostly excluded from the legal protections in the workplace that most of us take for granted. So this particular story was about the Obama administration had tried to rewrite the rule, the Labor Department's rule, that had excluded home care workers from minimum wage and overtime protections. And say, because they were, quote, companions rather than actual workers. Meanwhile, the vast majority of this workforce, which is about 2 million people, they work for third-party agencies. Some of those third-party agencies are for-profit agencies who were making money on this. And they sued to stop this rule. And a judge ruled in their favor. So last Thursday, an appeals court judge in the D.C. Circuit heard the appeal of the Labor Department saying, no, we really actually think these workers should have rights.
Crazy idea.
And, you know, you always hear the same sort of complaint when home care workers are demanding some bare minimum pay increase, right? Like the average pay for this field is like $9 an hour. And these are people who are taking care of somebody's like every need.
Right.
Helping you get out of bed in the morning, helping you eat, helping you go to the bathroom, making sure that you don't have to live in an institution. You can stay in your house if you have, you know, difficulty doing these things all on your own. And the argument is always that if we pay these people more, then the elderly people, the people with disabilities, if they help, will be stuck back in an institution.
Right.
And I kind of think that if we pay these people more, then maybe these people who own these third-party agencies will not be making as much money, and that's the real problem.
Right. It's always framed like that, right?
Which is why that doesn't really sound like a problem to me at all.
Right. And I remember I worked with a local in L.A. who organizing home health care workers, and you always had, like, testifying, because this was in California, and they have all these board of supervisor trial hearings, whatever, and you'd always have the people who were the people, you know, these people worked for, testifying on their behalf, saying, like, these people need to make more money. They helped me with the most basic things. I couldn't function without them. And it's, like, such a thankless job and such a basic job. It should be one of the most highly paid jobs, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really, it is great to see how many clients will side with their workers and will really work in concert with them to make sure that they get a decent wage.
Right.
And it's really frustrating that, you know, in this case, I go into a little bit in this piece, one particular company that is involved with the International Franchise Association, who listeners may remember also is trying to kill the $15 an hour minimum wage in Seattle, and represents businesses like, you know, McDonald's, also represents this company Brightstar, which is a franchise of home care industries. And let me tell you, I Googled them the other day to write this article, and their ads have been following me around the internet for the last like 4 days.
Oh my God.
Telling me how much money I'll make if I start a Brightstar franchise.
Maybe Sarah, if this whole journalism thing doesn't work out.
But like it's just the cognitive dissonance required to both like advertise on your page that people who start a Brightstar franchise will make like $1.3 million a year.
Right.
And we can't afford to pay our workers minimum wage.
Right. And now we know why.
It's like, how do you have a leg to stand on this?
Right. Well, thank you, Sarah. I think you just cut the leg off that they had, if you will. to continue the metaphor. And where can people find you on Twitter, Sarah Jaffe?
It's Sarah, SarahLJaffe.
So Sarah L as in Lady Jaffe on Twitter. Great. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Sarah. So,